Hey, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and we are back in the second part of the program today. This is going to be fun. I'm with Jay Kuo, who is a fascinating person, and I'm going to discover more with you about how fascinating he is. He's one of these Renaissance guys. Jay is the Chief Creative Officer at The Social Edge, a digital publishing and social media company based in New York City, and he has overseen George Takei's meteoric rise on social media from its inception. Jay is the composer and lyricist for the Broadway musical Allegiance and is a producer on several Broadway shows, including, drumroll, the Tony-winning Hadestown. And if you haven't seen it, you must. Okay, I don't hear you. So are we up there? I'm going to finish, and hopefully we'll get your sound there. Jay, also, I mean, if that wasn't enough, Jay was an appellate litigator, admitted before the Ninth Circuit and the U.S. Supreme Court. He now lives in Harlem and is on a quest for wisdom, hilarity, and great veggie eats. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I hear you now. Okay, so here we are, and in addition to all of this, you're a vegan.
I went plant-based about 2 years ago. And I was probably the last person any of my friends would have thought would go plant-based. and it came about because, I think in part because I was running myself completely ragged and eating poorly thinking I was enjoying life by stuffing my face with a lot of you know, heavy meats and cheeses and things. And I started to hit a wall health-wise. Hmm. And I had gained something like 20 pounds in the 2 years prior. And I just chalked it up. I was like, well, I'm turning 50. I guess this is what happens to you when you turn 50. and then I went to see my doctor, and I got some blood work done. And she said, oh, this is not good. And the main thing was, she said, your triglyceride levels are above 1,000.
Mm-hmm. That's high.
So I'm going to send you to a cardiologist. And I couldn't even process what was happening. I was like, wait a minute, I have a show, I've got a company, no, cardiologist? And so I went in and I got all these tests done, and they kept coming back and saying, you know, this is very serious, you need to come on for a stress test and then a calcium test, and we'll put you on this med and that med. And the meds didn't really change a lot, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting a little bit despondent about it. And I credit my sister, who is a teacher of yoga and qigong and lives in London with her acupuncturist husband. And I've always considered them very crunchy, granola, very people of Gaia. But I take her seriously because she's one of the wisest, most centered people I know. And she said, don't hate me, but I'm going to send you a book. And it's called How Not to Die.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Greger.
Dr. Greger. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of him before. I was skeptical, but I was also a little desperate. I was not getting better. Mm-hmm. It was getting worse. Mm-hmm. And so I read it. I was still skeptical. First of all, I'm mostly skeptical that I would ever be able to make a change like that. I'm like, I won't be able to. I can't live without my sausage. No yeah. way. My bacon, my cheeseburgers, my steak. Chicken, everything. I'm also a foodie. Like, mm-hmm. I cook. I love
it's
cooking.
Your identity. How yeah. could you give up all of these
right.
things?
Right. And but then I said, okay, all of that or death, pick. Right. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I choose life.
Good.
And some amazing things happened in the first, I would say, month and a half. First of all, I dove into it like a foodie would, like I was on some sort of Iron Chef challenge. Iron Chef cucumber, you know, we're gonna do all this stuff, and we're gonna figure out how to make cheese out of cashews, and you know, and I now make really fun brie out of cashews. Mm. But I attacked it like I would any challenge. I was like, you know, I'm just gonna do this, and I'm. You know, it's gonna be my own personal marathon. Never run a marathon in my life. Never thought I would. Never thought I would. Become a vegan. So but I noticed some things happen really quickly. One was that I dropped weight incredibly fast. I lost 15 pounds in 4 weeks, and I was eating like crazy. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was always hungry. But I was grabbing for different kinds of food. Food that, and I started learning things about microbiomes and fiber and all the things, right?
Yeah.
And it was intellectually fascinating to me. And because I had gotten to the habit of also meditating, thank you, Mimi, my sister, mm-hmm. I was able to do these self-check-ins. It's like, oh, wow, I'm actually feeling different. I feel different. I don't feel as bloaty. You know, mm-hmm. I slept better. I didn't sweat all night. I took note of these things, and I blogged about it.
Don't even know sometimes all the things you're putting up with.
Exactly.
And then when they're starting to go away, I like to say you don't know how good you can feel until you do it.
Right. And I also didn't know how good some things tasted
mm-hmm.
until you actually give them a chance to taste, like apart from all the things we layer in on them.
Without sugar and salt and oil?
Yeah, exactly. Covered up. I mean, they always used to play sort of second fiddle, ways to sort of augment the taste of meat. Instead, what happens if you let them take center stage, right? And so the other thing that I started realizing is that things like my cholesterol levels came down to normal, which had never happened in my life. I always thought it was genetic.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought the reason that I had high blood pressure and high cholesterol is because my dad had high blood pressure and cholesterol, and his dad did too. But then I read something about the Green Study in China. So the Green Study in China was a massive study of, I think, 600 million people, the biggest study ever commissioned by, I think it was Deng Xiaoping. And they looked at the rates of cardiovascular disease in different parts of China, also rates of cancer. And they found there were certain green zones where the rates of cardiovascular disease were nearly negligible. And they coincided and they correlated with a diet that was low in animal protein, high in bean protein.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the map and I said, that is where my family's from. And then I remembered something. Granddad's dad lived to 106. Granddad's granddad lived over 100. Why did granddad only live to 76? Why did my father pass when he was 80?
Mm-hmm.
He had another 20 years with... could it be because they moved to America?
Yes.
And it was staring me in the face. And then I was like, this is my body on my ancestor's diet.
Mm.
The green zone diet from China, where I'm eating soybean and split pea and I'm finding other ways to get the protein that I thought I could only get from eggs and chicken and beef and pig.
Mm, yeah.
So that was...
I mean, unfortunately, in China, we're seeing that they're becoming more like Americans today, too, because they're eating more like us, eating dairy, which they never used to eat before, and eating more meat as the affluence goes up. And we're seeing more cardiovascular disease, more chronic disease, and that's
a lot more, especially sad. In the cities.
Mm-hmm.
You pair that with the air pollution and everything else. I mean, it's a problem.
Okay, so you've discovered the plant-based diet, and you're feeling better, and you're looking better, and
I'm now 24 pounds lighter.
You're lighter. You're less of yourself.
Yeah.
And I imagine, I mean, you're smart, so you must have read more things about it and maybe connected a few dots. So I'm wondering, have you connected dots between what you're eating and other things in your life? You're a musician, an artist, you composed music for Allegiance, which is a fascinating story and about exploitation and discrimination. And does that connect at all with your food choices?
Well, what's interesting is I think that moving to a plant-based diet, suddenly I think the algorithms figured out that I was now a vegan and were starting to send me things. So, you know, that's not that comforting, but they figured it out pretty quickly. And I started, and the first thing that happened was, my best friends went plant-based, also.
Wonderful.
So one of my roommates, actually both of my roommates went with me, changed with me. One of them has since gone back to eating chicken. But,
okay.
But
maybe eating more vegetables now.
Yes, definitely. And my friends who live down the street from me, we've all just been a group of friends. One of them immediately switched to veganism, saying he'd been wanting to do it. And then his partner, his husband, was saying, no, I don't think I could get enough protein. But then I sent him the book, same book, and he read it, was skeptical, but also impressed, and started doing his own research into how, he's really into bodybuilding, not bodybuilding, but the really, really strong muscle mm-hmm. tone and everything. And he figured out how he could get, hundreds of grams of protein from non-animal-based sources.
Have you bought him a ticket yet to the premiere of The Game Changers on September 16th?
Oh, I don't know about it. Maybe
it's a movie about amazing athletes who are on a plant-based diet, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is in it saying you don't need meat.
Right.
And it's a great film. I mean, haven't seen it. I've seen the trailers for it, but you want to take them there.
Definitely. I mean, we everybody used to say, those four guys used to throw the craziest parties, you really got to know them. They're really wild. And now they said, oh, those four guys are those vegans in Harlem. but we're having a moment, I think, in our friendship where we can appreciate, we all start to appreciate sort of a few things. One is you start with what impacts your own life. And that is the things that you put into your body. And all of us are very conscious of that and have always been. And then you start thinking about, well, what are the externalities of what we are doing? And whether it's, especially with things like diet and use of plastics and other things. But so we started looking into the effects of the dairy industry and the meat industry, especially beef, on things like climate change. And, of course, because we've got such a large platform, social media platform, this has now become a thing that we champion in the content that we create. We create a lot of videos for Twitter for George to share to his fan base and
George Takei.
George Takei, right? we've written a great deal in articles and other content that he has since shared, and so we're taking sort of a look. Maybe you feel like you can't give up beef. Fully, but cut back, mm-hmm. Do it for yourself, do it for the environment. And here are some great options. We took it one step further. Both Lorenzo and I are entrepreneurs and we are part of investor groups. And we like to find really cool technologies to back. And one of them is a startup that uses mushroom-based technology to start to replace beef, and we think that is the wave of the future. We mm-hmm. think that is the future of how humankind must eat. I always tell people, look, if you ever want to leave this planet, you aren't taking the cows, right? you're taking the plants.
Mm-hmm. Of course,
you must. Yep. Right? And so we've got to think ahead. We've got to be visionary about it. We've got to support the people who are making it really smart choices and betting on the future instead of being mired in the past and stuck in their ways. People who think that they can't switch to a plant-based diet are simply wrong. They are simply wrong. I was seriously one of the biggest champions of a well-cooked steak you can mm-hmm. possibly imagine. I think that is, and I acknowledge that there's a path for people that you have to sort of understand, starting with yourself. Because if you don't understand yourself and your own choices, whether they are dietary or moral, whether they are inclusive of your impact on the world or not, those you must start with yourself. And that's been sort of the mission that I've been on, sort of not to evangelize about this, really, because I don't think that's that effective.
Doesn't work.
But to set an example, and I'm constantly putting my recipes and pictures of things I create online, and people are like, you need to make a cookbook. And I thought, oh yeah, I think I know what to call it. It's what the F do I make my vegan friends? Because a lot of people now have vegan friends, and they want to have a dinner party, and they are terrified. They don't know what to make.
Yeah, you know, I've been vegan for 31 years, and my partner Gary, who you'll meet after the program, who says he's responsible for climate change for all the meat that he's eaten, but he's a vegan for 13 years now. And said originally he could never do it. So there's many of you out there that say you can't do it, but you can do it. And we're just not invited to dinner very often. And I know it's because people are petrified. And for those of you who have invited us, thank you very much. Thank you for your courage. We are wonderful, appreciative guests. It's a funny thing, though. I was thinking about it yesterday. I lived in France for 4 years as a vegan in the early 90s, and that's when people weren't talking about veganism. They are a bit more now in France and in Europe. But my friends were really supportive, and they made food for me. They made beautiful vegetables. It was usually swimming in olive oil, but it was fine. It was lovely, and I really appreciated it. Nobody flinched. But here, I think people are less used to preparing food or preparing vegetables. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like, what is vegan food? How do I do that?
Right. And because they think that a meal has to center around a slab of flesh somehow.
Yeah.
And breaking past that notion is tricky. And I think that, for my non-vegan friends, I start with baby steps, because I try to introduce things to them that are familiar to them, but which fool the palate. And I think that 80-90% of people would switch to more plant-based alternatives if they knew how good it actually tasted, mm-hmm. and how much better it was for you. And so I take trips with my friends, and I volunteer to cook, and I will cook all vegan meals. Including for my two friends down in Nashville, Tennessee, who, wow. Like you never would think, right? I made them scrambled, quote, eggs out of Just Egg, this product, mm-hmm. that a friend of mine has introduced me to. And I used a Chinese chili paste on it. And he texted me, and he got back to Nashville. He's like, I want that recipe. I liked it so much. I'm like, okay, well, you could do it with regular eggs. He's like, no, I want the Just Egg.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and this is somebody who's a gigantic person, right?
Oh, so yeah.
A really, really big person. And you would never think that they would want the mung bean alternative to, mm-hmm. egg. But it was fresh. I thought it was fresher tasting. And I said, no dietary cholesterol. So it's possible.
That's fabulous. You know? I know a lot of people have said, when I've prepared food for them, they said, if you could cook for me every day, I could do it. Yeah. So at least your friend was interested in making it for himself, which is good.
Which I think, like, it would be very helpful, and this is my idea for this cookbook, it's just germinating, is like if you had familiar, easy-to-obtain items, you say all these things are available at any Whole Foods, you know, and here's what you should buy in advance, and for a week you could cook vegan. Give it a try,
mm-hmm.
right? And you'll surprise yourself, right? And it'll be healthy for you, and you'll have given the environment a little bit of a break.
It really is easy, everybody. In 2019, it is easy. It's a lot easier than it was in 1988 when I went vegan.
And the thing is, you know, we in the West are so sort of, we treat meat so with such reverence, mm-hmm. and but we actually, in some way, we don't appreciate it. Because of that, so in China, meat was maybe eaten once a week, right? And they for the rest of the week, they understood that the other ingredients that they were dealing with, they had to nourish themselves, learn to nourish themselves with that. And so the standard food in the part of China where I grew up was not meat. It was simply, it was vegetables. It was and it was simple grains,
mm-hmm.
and the people were extremely healthy.
They right. were,
and sadly, China is now sort of tipped to a Western style, voracious appetite for pork and chicken and, mm-hmm. beef.
I'm not a big fan of some of the newer products that are out there. I'm very glad they're out there, but I'm more of a Whole Foods kind of person. So I'm not like going nuts over Beyond Burger and Impossible Burger and all those. But some of the ones that I like are the mock meats that the Buddhist monks were making in China or in Taiwan.
Those
are amazing.
Mock duck, which is there's a restaurant in China. It's a vegetarian. I think it's called Lotus. And this is at a time when I was eating duck and things, and I went there and I was like, this is crazy good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not the same as duck, but it's a nod toward duck. So they use bean curd. There's also tempeh.
Yeah.
And it's mostly sort of soy based products, right, that have been marinated and. You know, the Thais are very good at this too. Whenever I want to go out to dinner with my friends and I don't want them to fuss over me, so it's good to get Thai because you can get amazing flavors, just you know, and great mock duck or tofu as your protein, and you're not missing anything. In fact, people are often looking at my dish enviously.
That's right, because it's more colorful and more interesting.
Right.
Yeah,
more flavors.
Okay. So, when we're eating plant foods, I think it opens the door to realizing, for many of us, not everyone, because some people are just focused on health, but you mentioned the environment, and our choices affect many things, and we can make really informed choices when we choose plants over animals. We're doing a good thing for the environment, for climate change, for pollution, many, many things, and for our own health, and also for animals. And we live in a world that is very violent and very exploitive.
Yes.
So now I want to jump into your artistry, because you did this musical, Allegiance, it's about the exploitation and the violence. I mean, taking people out of their homes and putting them in internment camps. Does eating plant-based fit in with what motivates you in terms of your artistry?
In a way, it's all connected, because I believe that in sort of the Taoist sense that when you resort to violence, you have left wisdom. You have departed from your natural self. The natural self, according to Taoist tradition, is not violent, is not exploitative, is not angry. And, in the course of meditation, they also teach that when you're thinking about what is before you, whether it's your path or your meal, that to understand where it came from and then where it's headed, it's important that where it came from, every bite that you take can be a joy. It can be that this came from the soil, it came from the sun, it came from water, and you can be part of that cycle. Mm. Or it could come from terror. It could come from pain. And so when you realize that, when you understand that you are in a continuum, you have both a place and a connection. And if instead you are distorting that continuum, then all that flows from that, violence becomes more possible. Mm-hmm. Disconnection is
we
more possible.
We see that so much today.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so what's the most amazing part about going plant-based was after I thought about myself, it led inevitably to thinking about others, and it led inevitably to thinking about others who are not of our species, and then it led to thinking about the planet in general. And I don't think that would have been possible. Mm-hmm. And so when we're creating art, we're storytelling, right? We're telling about the human condition. And I think that great storytellers, which I aspire to be, they understand that the human condition is about being able to, artistry is about being able to connect the audience to the condition you are describing in an authentic way. That connectivity, for me as an artist, increased incredibly in the past couple of years. I'm now working on a show called Inigo. I'm the librettist. And it's about a girl who's on the autism spectrum, mm-hmm. and she's nonverbal. Mm-hmm. It will be the first musical that stars a nonverbal child on the spectrum. And through the magic of theater, she's able to sing her internal thoughts to the audience. And so it's that when you tell a story like that, you need to be able to connect. You cannot detach yourself. You need to dive fully in. And that's a challenge. It's been a huge challenge, but I don't know if I'd be up for it had I not gone down the road, which includes being plant-based, which includes studies in compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And
beautiful. We just have like 3 minutes left. And I wanted just to talk a little bit about Allegiance, just because I think it's an important musical. And,
sure.
and I think that many people do not even know what's happened in this country during World War II and what we did.
Sure. Allegiance tells a story set in World War II of the Japanese-American community. 120,000 of them moved out of the West Coast forcibly, removed from their homes, and placed into 10 different internment camps in America. Two-thirds of them were U.S. citizens. They were deprived of due process and of their property and held without charge or trial for years. And we thought when we were creating the show that we were telling a piece of our history. What we didn't know was that we would also be telling a piece of our present. And that has become so resonant now, so important. We're actually taking the show to Japan next year at their request of the in Tokyo, because I think that everyone wants to know this story. And it's quite a universal story. And unfortunately, we haven't learned its truths. We haven't
mm-hmm.
learned its lessons.
No.
George Takei came out and said that we are opening and running concentration camps again in America. Very controversial statement. But if you think about what we are doing, we are walking down that road because we have identified a group of people and segregated them and shut them up because of who they are.
And fear. This made-up fear.
A trumped-up mm-hmm. fear, exactly.
Trumped-up fear,
it
yeah.
was George Takei says it was a failure of political leadership that led to the internment. And here we have a political leadership that is exploiting the fear and mistrust and nativism in order to achieve political ends.
Well, I, as an American, a Native American of the United States, meaning I was born here in this country and my parents were born here and my grandparents, most of them were born here, I believe in reparations. And I believe we have a lot of apologizing to do in the United States. We need to apologize. We need to apologize to the Native American Indians. We need to apologize to those we put in slavery. We need to apologize to those that were put in internment camps. We have a lot of apologizing and reparations to do. And
yeah, I mean, I think it's the tricky thing now is, you know, we need to stop this train we're on because where it leads. We talked a little bit about climate crisis. If we can't handle tens of thousands of migrants at our border without losing our minds as a country, what are we going to do when there are millions heading north because of the carbon we put into the air?
Questions to think about. We have a lot of things to think about. And my answer for most questions is eat plants, not animals. It's the thing you can do today. Right now, no laws need to be changed. And it's easy and delicious. We've got lots of recipes at responsibleeatingandliving.com where I live. And I think we're going to wrap this up. So, Jay, thank you so much for joining me today. And I love everything that you're doing with the Social Edge and with your artistry.
Thanks for having me.
And with your food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. You can email me at info@realmeals.org if you have something to say. I hope you do. I love to hear from you. Thanks for joining me again, and have a delicious week.